outside with sunglasses and a beach ball.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, it's hot out here.
I know. I'm going to send my picture to Grandma and Grandpa in Michigan just to be an asshat.
It's 85 degrees. It's 85 there, but 85 below zero.
Right, I know. I hope they open it and cry.
You're all heart, Rashi.
Yeah, heart and a little bit of ass.
Paul Dini.
And hi, I'm Misty Lee. It all happened at once.
Yeah. And it was wrong. Yeah. I forgot my lines. Hi, everybody. How's it going?
Yeah, hi.
This is off to a great start.
I'm going to go make some lemonade. It's hot outside.
Oh, geez.
It's hot inside.
You know what? I'm telling you right now, you've got to knock it off with this weather because we're going to have an earthquake.
Earthquake?
Earthquake.
It's the 20th anniversary of the last big one, or semi-big one.
Enough. Let's not talk about it. Let's just go on to another subject.
All right.
Have you guys seen the new episodes of Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, and we loved... Wait, no, we didn't, because they Americanized it.
What do you mean? No, we I loved it. I thought they were really good.
He loved it. I liked it.
They're getting a little lighter, they seem. They haven't... It's interesting that I found in the first two seasons, the first episode and the third episode mm-hmm. are always like serious drama with just a hint of levity.
Yeah.
And then the second episodes of both are always more fantastic, over the top. Uh-huh. Like when you've got Chinese acrobats in the sewers and cannons and everything that was in the second one they did. And then when they did The Hound of the Baskervilles, it doesn't... There's something about Holmes, this version of Holmes and animals, that doesn't seem to work very well.
Interesting.
Whereas in the classic Sherlock Holmes or the Jeremy Brett, you could go up against a hound or a deadly snake or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't seem to be... incongruous with that world. Sherlock Holmes is done in present day using a creature of some sort almost doesn't really work, you know, because the idea of a specially trained animal, an animal specially trained to kill somebody, really seems to be of that time. Of the, you know, late Victorian, early Edwardian era. The same with, you know, hunchbacks and foreigners, you know, little wild men from Borneo types with air guns and stuff like that. It seems to be almost too exotic for the Sherlock they're doing now.
So but, as long as it's period, it works.
I think so. I think that you could do it now with...
like Robert Downey Jr. could pull that off.
Yeah.
In his role.
Yeah. I think that there is something that just tends to be more of the exotic. Back when Holmes was being written in the... When did they write them? In around the 1890s through the 1920.
Yeah, that's about right.
And most of the stories were set before that. Whereas he wrote them into the 20th century, he tended to set them back in the 1880s and stuff. Although, one of the last ones has him on a mission in World War I, I believe. But it almost seems like that spirit of adventure and exploration and the last gasp of that was like right around World War II, and maybe 10 years after, if you read like men's adventure magazines, you know. But around 1960, the world became too domestic a place. You could get any place within a day.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of that more exotic nature went away. And then certainly in the last 30 years, with political correctness, you can't really have, you know, native tribesmen as killers and things like that. I mean, you know, it always makes a good story.
Yeah.
But you have so many people screaming about stuff like that, even though the world hasn't actually changed all that much. But people are just, you know, quick to
shriek about things like that. So,
whereas,
I mean, you couldn't have Mormons as a bad guy in a book.
Well, I don't know. The only bad guy you can have now is Elmer Fudd. You know, yeah. he's white, middle aged, a millionaire, hunts with a gun. The only thing that would keep him from being a perfect villain is he's got a speech impediment. So you're making fun of him for the speech impediment or something. So, but in the Holmes stories, you know, well, most of the bad guys were English anyway. So
yeah.
You know, the Englishmen always make good villains because.
I just remember reading that first book. I think it was Signs of Four, right? Where
yeah.
They had the American Mormon storyline that went through it.
It was, I don't know if it was Sign of the Four. I think it was Study in Scarlet or one of the Mormons were the villain.
Yeah, it was one of the first two books I remember.
Yeah, there was The Valley of Fear, Study mm-hmm. in Scarlet. I'm reading the book, the Sign of Three right now. Or the sign of four right now.
Yeah.
And that hasn't got, and I don't think that's the Mormon one.
Okay.
But it's a
Scarlet then, I guess.
It's whatever the first one was. I think that was Study in Scarlet. And then all that men's adventure stuff is gotta find a new way to do it. Because it is fun. But watching these episodes, they're good, and they've fleshed out the cast a bit, and you see a lot more of Sherlock and Mycroft.
Have you bothered with the American Elementary?
You know, a good friend of mine is writing on that, and I hear it's good, and in some ways it eclipses Sherlock.
I heard similar.
And there's what's interesting is that the guy who plays Sherlock and Benedict Cumberbatch were paired up in a version of Frankenstein together.
That was great, where they flipped the roles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So now they must be good friends. They must chat each other up like, I'm playing Sherlock. Well, I'm playing Sherlock Holmes too. You know. So. My Dr. Watson is prettier. No, she's not. But it's fun watching them together. Yeah, I really enjoy it. And I kind of wish it was on every week, but then again, it's a big time commitment. You're sitting through a movie.
Yeah, because they're each 2 hours long.
Yeah.
Three of them.
Mm-hmm. You could easily cut that into a 8-part season.
Yeah.
I noticed our friend Floyd Norman was rather upset, and so were a lot of people in the animation industry about comments that Meryl Streep made about Walt Disney.
Oh?
Yes.
What did she say?
Well, she said that Walt Disney was a racist and a sexist and an anti-Semite while she was picking up some award or award nomination.
And what? Where did it come from?
Well, I don't know exactly. I mean, I did watch the whole thing, but I got mad, you know?
Yeah.
She seemed so damn smug and imperious about saying it. I think she was actually honoring Helen... Was it Helen Mirren who played P.L. Travers?
Emma Thomas.
Emma Thompson.
What did Meryl Streep say about Walt Disney?
She called him a racist and an anti-Semite. You know, all
did
the things...
Did she know him personally?
No, and these are all the things. These are all the comfortable little myths that start off as either Saturday Night Live routines or stand-up comic routines or somebody says it on Family Guy, and it gets out there. It's a gross exaggeration of it. And
well, it's an ignorant statement for someone who didn't even know him to make, I think.
Yeah. And
I'm not saying he was or wasn't. I'm just saying I didn't know him.
Well, I can't tell you all the times I've sat in pitch meetings. And I'm not going to say who, because I'm going to get in trouble. But I've sat in plenty of pitch meetings with plenty of studio executives, and the comments just fly. Now, they don't put these things into practice in real life, but they certainly, in the name of humor, they certainly don't, you know, hold anything back about lampooning certain, individuals who are different than them. So I think there's a stigma attached to Walt Disney because he's supposed to be like, the cartoonist's answer to Gandhi. You know, like from the minute he sketched that first Mickey Mouse, he was like cartoon Jesus and beholden to scrutiny that is only held up for, you know, held up to his characters. And there was a letter that was distributed recently from the 30s about a woman who wanted a job as an animator at the Disney studio, and she was denied a job because the person said, all the cartoon work and animation is done by young men. We feel they have whatever it takes to do the job. You know, yeah, okay, it's sort of an ignorant statement to make at that time. Again, you know, most of the guys around that time were artists, and they were kind of a rowdy group, and it was not really, you know, it was what it was, you know. Yeah. But that said, a lot of women did come to the studio. We're at the studio at that time in various capabilities.
Yeah,
this was not the era of, if you've got a dream, you can be all you can be. There were social mores that, you know, kept people down.
I don't even know if it was that, because Floyd said that there were tons of chicks at the studio.
Oh, yeah, and maybe
it was just they didn't have a men's room on that floor.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I can't defend the time. Floyd would be the person to ask about that.
Yeah, and then they all came in after that, you know, this was around the time of Snow White. But around that time, then a lot of women came into the studio. So mm-hmm. There just weren't many doing animation at that time. There weren't many doing animation anywhere at that time. There were a few at Fleischer's, I believe, and maybe one or two at Warner's. But it was really kind of a small group of people who were doing this stuff.
Yeah.
And then as the studio evolved and as everybody's attitudes through the 30s and 40s evolved, then more women came in. I mean, you only have to look as far as that movie with Walt, you know, El Grupo, to show what a big part Mary Blair played
in the
design and the shaping of the visual look of that studio and the South American movies. I mean, you know, there's one of her paintings hanging right over there of Alice, you know, from Alice in Wonderland, and Walt relied on her, like a lot of his key people, to visualize his you know, thoughts as they pertain to the movies he was making. So, you know, it's something that people have gotten very comfortable slamming him in that role because they, you know, they don't want a shot at him. And maybe they want a shot at the company, or they just, it's too, seems too good to be true. But Floyd's latest article today was on women that he knew at Disney who were very happy to be there and just loved the hell out of the
Great.
Place. Yeah. So.
Yeah, but that's... I think the more idealized you are as a person, that, you know, any flaw, any insignificant, you know, scruple that somebody finds is exaggerated and, you know, just blown out of proportion.
Tear down the idol.
Yeah, yeah.
Because yeah.
Everyone's infallible, but we need to see it.
Yeah.
Well, especially in this day and age. I mean, like, you know, it's like, hey, this is going too good. We got to create a controversy.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking a couple weeks ago about another one, you know, like on A&E and all that stuff. And it's just like, whatever.
You know, Walt's niece was being profiled recently, and she was like making the most ignorant statement. She was actually coming out in support of Meryl Streep, saying, "Oh, he was all that and worse." She goes, "Did you ever see a movie made called The Jungle Book? It's all about wanting to return a kid to his own kind. That's all the animals talk about, is we have to take him back to his own
kind.
To humans, because there is a tiger going to kill him.
Yeah,
and none of the animals in the jungle can defend him from the tiger. So that's why they're taking him home." Then she babbles on and says, and then there's this horrible musical number called King of the Jungle, where, you know, it's horrifically racist. And it's like, no, well, for one thing, the song is called I Want to Be Like You.
And second, it's sung by a white guy.
It's sung by a white guy. It's sung by an Italian-American.
Everyone always assumes he's black.
And he's not.
No,
Louis Prima was as, I mean, as Italian as Italian is, so if Italian's white, I mean, I don't really know what white is.
He was an Italian from Louisiana. There's a huge Italian population down in New Orleans.
So he has a gumbo mouth.
Yeah, yeah, great jazz player. He lived out in Vegas. He was playing this scat jazz type thing, and everybody assumes that, you know, if you're seeing something racist, you're bringing it there yourself, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, but it's all nonsense. These are the lies upon lies, or the half truths that everybody sort of, you know, embraces because it becomes easier that way. Like every public figure and you know leader has that, and that's, you know, because it gets an easy laugh.
But
so rather than accept somebody for the good they do, it's like, let's find the one or two, you know, warts.
Yeah.
You know, that really affect nothing.
Like Kennedy sleeping with Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's, you're just going to find something, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know.
Although that's pretty awesome.
What? Well, and Jackie with... Kennedy was like stiff, light as a feather and stiff as a board and not in the game playing way. Yeah. I mean, she was just like, oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, she was so spaced out and ridiculous. I know she was a huge socialite, and but I mean, some of the interviews you see with her, it's like, woo-hoo, knock-knock, anybody there?
Yeah.
And she was just like, whatever you want. I mean, you remember the movie Coming to America?
Yeah.
When he met his wife-to-be? Mm-hmm. And he was like, hop on one foot, bark yes. like a dog. And she was like, That is how I see Jackie O. For as much work as she did and as, you know, as much as an idol as she was, for people, it was a different time. And yeah. they admired her sunglasses and her dresses.
And pillbox
you know?
Hats.
Jackie, Jackie O was the first celebrity I ever remember getting really tired of. And she was like the first like real megastar of my generation because mm-hmm. you know, she'd been married to the president. She had survived the assassination and everything. Mm-hmm. And then she married Aristotle Onassis. And up until the day she died, it was Jackie O all the time. And she had just become this icon. And I just was... sick of her.
She was the
her.
First Kardashian.
Yeah, she was. She was. And if she was around today, she'd be having a reality show and and everything.
Well, what's really interesting is when John Jr. told her he wanted to act, she said, you can be or you can act. And he was like, all right. You know, and she was just like, I'm no son of mine is doing that.
Yeah.
If she even said that and had the wherewithal to construct a complete sentence, because I ain't convinced she did. Terrible.
Yeah, she did kind of have, move in the style of a, like a marionette or something.
Ugh.
Yeah.
So stilted and vapid.
Yeah. As a kid, whoa. I remember like she God. Was everywhere, and so was Elizabeth Taylor, and I was kind of like, why do these people even matter?
She's fine. She was fine.
Yeah.
She was nothing, but she was fine. She was very beautiful. Elizabeth Taylor was.
Yeah. So
Jackie O looked like a human frog. Her yeah. eyes are like on the side of her head where her ears are. Like she was weird looking. She was very thin, uh-huh. you know, but she was just, it was like someone put their hands down the middle of her face and just spread her open and then left her that way. And like pushed it down in her temples. And they were like, okay. Like you look at her and you go, did you have a facelift that like pulled your eyes apart? What happened there?
Did you ever see the movie Brazil?
I was just thinking no. of that.
When the lead character's mother goes for a facelift, they do this thing where they just stretch her skin off to like impossible lengths and her eyes are just sort of like out
Why would
here.
They do that?
It was
the future.
It's a future and it was it's a
maybe that's what she had done.
Terry Gilliam, it's a fantasy yeah. movie, so
well, they
it's
would
got elements of fantasy.
Have to stretch her skull to get her eyes to move. Yeah. Otherwise she would just have like red around her eyes like some of those older ladies at the Pacific broadcasters lunches too with their sunglasses and their stories of days of old.
And they're drinking and drinking wine.
Stop it with the wine. The I already wine. Covered this.
Wine.
We went to a luncheon once and it's like all the old widows of, you know, like Bob Hope's wife. And,
oh really?
Yeah, Bea Arthur used to be, she used to get up on the day. I never got to see her there. But
wow.
our late friend Mark Nelson was a member of the Radio Broadcasters Club out here. And they were all very close, and they get together, like, what, once every 2 months or so?
Something like that, yeah.
And these women would just get up on the day, and they had had their plastic surgery, like, in the 70s. I would say 70s or 80s, maybe, like, yes. when they started to
wow.
age. And so their eyes are stretched open, and you could see the reds around their eyes. And you think,
oh.
man, girl, how do you blink? You need yeah. a blink. And so they all wear these gray graduated sunglasses. You know, like they're dark on the top and then they're light on the bottom so they can look down and read.
And they casually spray water into their eyes.
They
to
must
add
do
moisture.
Something.
Yeah.
You know, but they all look like it's weird, you know. And some of them have had good work. Like the ones
yeah.
with a lot of money have had good work. But some of them are just atrocious. And I was sitting out there as a 20-something going, ew. You know, like watching them going, ee, no facelifts for me.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
they've come a long way, but holy Christmas.
Yeah, there's...
That shit is scary.
Yeah.
It is scary.
Woo! And I mean, in LA, we kind of forget that they look like monsters. It's like, ew, that's
oh, yeah.
kind of arresting. Uh-huh. You know, like you kind of look at people and go, huh, that's kind of not a good choice you made there. But if they were walking around Wisconsin like that, people would be flipping out.
Yeah.
Oh,
they'd
think it
they'd
was
be like the Elephant
like
Man.
Bride of Frankenstein or something.
Right?
Yeah.
They think it was
oh, yeah.
the Hodag down from
right.
the yeah. woods.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh my God, the Hodags!
Right? I mean, it's just, it's weird, these choices these women make. So, We did some cool stuff this week.
Yeah, we did.
Well, I did. You went up and saw your mommy.
Yeah.
You want to talk about her on here?
Well, we can talk about backing up to Muggsy. Muggsy had surgery.
Muggsy Jean had some cataract surgery last Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Paul went up north and
I saw my mom.
Saw his mom.
Who's taking chemotherapy now and doing better.
And so. 2 days after Muggsy had surgery, I went out to lunch with my friend Renee, who I hadn't seen in like forever. And then I came home, and our entire kitchen was covered in bloody diarrhea. It was everywhere. And I knew it wasn't mine, and I knew Paul wasn't here.
I wasn't home.
But Deuce's medicine has just changed, or Deuce's food has just changed, because he's been eating kangaroo, because we're trying to figure out what he's allergic to. And Muggsy was on tons of surgery meds, and I didn't know who did it. So off to the ER we went for 6 hours Saturday night. And so I had a four-hour lunch and a six-hour evening with the boys in the ER, and they're both just fine.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know who did it. You know, like it was Muggsy. And so we took him off some meds, but while they were in there, it was 6 hours long because they were putting dogs down all around us. And I mean, like it was just a night they couldn't save anybody. And these guys didn't have the outdoors, you know, so they were sick to their stomachs and they had no way to relieve themselves. So they just started going to the bathroom everywhere. Like they were just like, okay, I guess this is where we go. So instead of running out the back door every time they had to go, or they were trying to hold it and then they couldn't. So it looked like they were losing their bowels. And the doctor said, do you want me to keep them overnight? And I said, how emotional do you think this is? And she said, you know, I really hadn't considered that. Muggsy was in a cone, so he thought he was being punished. So that created a ton of stress for him.
I wasn't home.
No, you weren't here, but it's and all fine.
But the dogs get antsy when one of us travels.
Oh, sure.
And for the day, for at least a day or two that one of us is gone, they're looking for them, and then they're looking for the person who's missing.
And then they get used to you being gone after like 2 days. But he was only gone for 2 days, so there was a little bit of stress from that. Mm-hmm. And so I told her, I said, you know what? Instead of hospitalizing them, considering what's going on back there, I'm going to take them home. Tell me what to look for. You know, like if this becomes an emergency. And she said, well, if you wake up in the middle of the night, she said, leave the back door open so they can just run in and out as they need to. Turns out they slept through the whole night and they didn't need it. Mm-hmm. But she said, lift Muggsy's gums and, you know, lift his cheek and see if his gums stay pink.
Yeah.
If they go white, he's got to go in.
Yeah, because he's losing blood at that point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Internal bleeding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it was like that. And I brought him home. And as soon as I brought them home, she said, as soon as you get him home, take the cone off. She said, I think Muggsy is a very emotional dog. Mm-hmm. And I think this cone is affecting him psychologically. He feels crippled with it on. And I think he feels like he's being punished. And I said, that's an interesting take. And I brought him home. And as soon as they got in the house, they improved 60%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as soon as that cone came off of him, he was my dog again. And I went, how interesting. But they were cooped up in that room. They could smell, feel, and hear those other dogs getting put down, I'm sure. Oh. Every dog in there was in crisis.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, what's going on? You know, while we were sitting there, Deuce's bowels started bleeding.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, it's time for us to go. You know, but they were, now they're okay. You know, Muggsy's still on his surgery meds. We cut some of them. And
it wasn't the kangaroo meat.
No, it wasn't that. But I had switched them to chicken. So the dogs are allergic to chicken.
Just had a bunch of Hobart's food laying around. Is that what it was?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where we got it. Yeah, from the same place we order Hobart's. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Hobart doesn't mind sharing. Do you, Hobart? Oh, I guess he does. but they can't have it, which I think is super weird because they eat chicken for 4 years and they can't have it now.
Oh.
So that was Saturday. And then Sunday, I don't remember what we did. Yesterday was cool, what we did yesterday. You came home Sunday. Oh, I put a bunch of file cabinets together. I was working around the house. And then yesterday, I met Chad Allen over
at... Right.
What?
Yesterday, you had a really good day at the castle.
Yeah, we met at the Magic Castle, and we pitched 19 disability access ideas to the Board of Trustees.
That's fantastic.
And we got immediate yeses on 2 out of 13. They gave us yeses on everything, but they need to research the other 11.
Yeah, they need to make sure that they're
all... And so it looks like we're going to have... They ordered blind menus today. They sent the PDFs in.
Wow.
Today,
that's awesome.
The day after,
That's so great.
And so the Magic Castle will have visually impaired, which is large raised text, and also Braille menus available. And I left 2 Braille decks of cards at the front desk that people can check out if they want to do magic for the blind.
That's cool.
So that was, no, they did 3 out of 13. Mm-hmm. And then the third one was that they immediately implemented, I can't remember what it was. Whatever it was there. Milt Larson gave the okay for us to go through with a Braille label maker. and clear tape so that you can't see it, because mm-hmm. you don't need to see it. You just yeah. need to feel it. Mm-hmm. And on the back of the picture, the back or the side of all the picture frames in the entire Magic Castle, Chad is going to decide what it says, and there's going to be a description, a title, and the year that the photo was taken. So wow. he can walk people down that hallway and tell them what's in every frame in his castle.
Yeah. That is amazing.
Isn't that pretty amazing? That Thomas Edison thing, it just really, you know, went forward. And I said on here, when I saw Chad giving Tommy a tour of his castle, I thought, this needs to be more Chad's castle than it is, because the gentlemen and ladies' rooms aren't labeled in Braille.
Yeah.
Like, you don't even know which is which. And I was talking to Chad, and I said, you know, how do you know what to label without going overboard? And he said, part of the fun of the Magic Castle is the exploration. And Chad is blind, so uh-huh. he would know, yeah, yeah. you know. But he said part of it is the textures and the things that you see or that you feel, you know. But he said, you know that you need to label it if the not having it labeled could cause a potentially embarrassing situation. For example, as a man, he does not want to walk into the ladies' room. So let's label the ladies' rooms
yes.
and the gentlemen's rooms.
Yes.
I do not want to, he said, I do not want to accidentally open an emergency fire exit.
Yes.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, anything that would squeal, I don't want to fall out the side of the castle and onto the ground.
Uh-huh.
So if there is a drop or danger, you know, so it was danger and embarrassment are the two things that you're really looking out for as yeah. far as that's concerned. And what was really fun, and I told Paul about this when I came home, was, first of all, two of the trustees on the Magic Castle, the board of trustees at the Magic Castle is a group of magicians
mm-hmm.
who get together and they make decisions on things involving magic in the castle. So it's like the board of directors, but the board of directors of a company handles the business stuff,
yes.
expenditures, food and beverage, and that kind of
yes.
stuff. The board of trustees handles the artistic stuff.
Okay.
Like what I just described to you, mm-hmm. the experience of the castle, mm-hmm. the colors, the logos, you know, like, I mean, that they work together on that stuff because that's business too, but you get it.
Mm-hmm.
So two of the trustees, one of them has a visually impaired wife.
Oh.
Another one worked in the Library of Congress for the blind. The part
wow.
of, you know, so it was like, they were like, oh, and then Max Maven chimed in and said, I have a couple of ideas I've been wanting to work on for years. And I said, well, what I would really like to pitch is an access subcommittee
uh-huh.
where a disability access subcommittee, which might be a subcommittee of membership or something,
uh-huh.
where we meet with new members or disabled members and say, how can we help make this more your club? And
yeah.
put these ideas in motion. And it's happening, and it happened really fast. And I'm really excited, and it makes me really proud to be a member of the club.
That's great.
I'm proud for you. That's just
yeah.
something unbelievable.
And it should be happening. I mean,
yes,
it just makes sense,
oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really nice, and it's really... And Chad told me when we were leaving, he said, man, I've been asking for Braille menus since 2002. He said, I don't know how you did this. And I said, I didn't do this.
Wow.
We all did it together.
Yeah,
you know, but I mean,
you,
it's, you know, it's, I said 11 years wait, what's a rush, you know?
A lot of people do good by themselves, you know, for themselves. You do good, so much good for other people.
Yeah, well, this is what I told you when I came home. I said, if I'm going to start a chain reaction,
mm-hmm.
this is the kind of chain reaction I want to
yeah,
begin.
Yeah,
that's a cool chain reaction
yeah.
to go. I had an idea. Chad got on board. Now
yeah.
the board of trustees is on board, and they have even more ideas than because we went in with a researched printed handout of 13 suggestions
mm-hmm.
and they just added on, and they were like, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and you know, like, oh, I've always wanted to do this, and you know, like, they want to do an audio tour where
fantastic.
You have wireless headset on, and when
yeah.
you walk into a certain area
oh,
it
sure.
tells you the painting to your left is it, you know, like that kind of thing
mm-hmm.
and so
fantastic.
One of the board of trustees works with Imagineering and said, that's my thing, we're doing that right now with Disney
nice.
And he said, let me do it here
yeah.
and it was just like, it was crazy how
wow.
fast. And that's what the committee would cover, is, you know, the releasing and the, you know, the unfolding of these projects and overseeing it, making sure it happens, and then reporting back to the trustees. So unfortunately, most of the brunt of the weight of this falls on our general manager, Joe Furlow.
Yeah.
But he is so efficient and he's so awesome that he immediately ordered Braille menus today.
That's great.
He called because Chad had researched three companies he could get them from.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially Chad unlocked the door for him and said, this
yeah.
is how you do it. And Joe said, oh, well, it's not that I don't want to. Then, you know, he assigned it to somebody in the office and said, you're in charge of this. Find out what they need because you're my art department guy.
Yeah.
Get them what they need. Let's order at least, you know, I think they're going to order. He asked for two and I think they're going to order four or five. But they're
yeah.
going to be huge.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because the menus, I think, are 6 or 7 pages and Braille takes up like double the
yeah,
font.
Exactly.
And so
mm-hmm.
that'll be Braille, and then attached to the back of that will be a large fonted raised letter for the visually challenged, yes. You know, not completely impaired. So yes. I don't know what the proper, you know, like what you say, you know, so there's blind people and people who don't see well,
there's
essentially.
There's legally blind and then
mm-hmm.
there's...
Yeah, so it's like large text raised letters if you need that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then complete Braille if you can read that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, but Chad can't see at all. So it's really funny. I send him texts all the time because his texts come through as voices, you know, like he doesn't,
oh, yeah,
you know, like
yeah.
when he types, it goes A, C, semicolon, you know, like it's all voice activated. So I send him things that say battery low. I'll send him to, like, out of nowhere, just to be a bitch.
You're awesome.
Oh, man.
And, you know, like we'll be in the middle of a conversation and I'll say, button error, all photos deleted. And he wrote me back and he goes, ha ha, sucker, I don't have any photos on my phone. What am I going to do with them? We get along real good, and it's funny, you know. I was he's you know, he's really good natured. Battery low all the time. I do it to him all the time. And
so you help out one person, but you make somebody else's life even
same guy. It's the same guy. I'm just
it's like
a bitch
a seesaw.
Across the
There's
board.
An up and down to it.
And yeah, then, yeah, but yeah. I told him. I said I'm a non-discriminatory bitch. I'm just nasty across the board. And he was like, I love it. So we get along really good. He said, you know, Funny Eddie, who we've had on here before. Funny Eddie sends him stuff all the time too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like naked B. Arthur photo. You know, like that kind of stuff. And he's like, what? No, no.
Oh, wow.
You know, but they're well. I send that to you too.
Oh,
but Funny Eddie and I really tease him. But the thing is why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, like if I had a limp, people would call me gimpy. If I had whatever, you know, like whatever my hang-ups are, people tease each other that love each other.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's just fun. It's not, it sounds like I'm saying it's fun to pick on the blind, and that's not what I'm saying. It's fun
no,
to
it's
pick
like
on
your,
everyone.
Your friends can take it.
That just sounds terrible, but we're good friends. Chad and I are very familiar, and he called today, and he was like, I just want you to check your email. Would you check your email? That's not how he talks, but... Oh, and he wants to do a podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you can come in.
Yeah, he wants to come in and talk about the Thomas Edison thing.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah, and he was like, hey, we should grab Ben Churchill, too. And I said, oh, maybe, yeah.
And we can put a link to the episode and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If Tommy's in town, I'd rather, you know, I'll get all three of them. And Trish and Kari, who took our pictures.
Right.
We could do all five of them. I'd just have to warn you ahead of time for all the microphones.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, I know you. I know what you're going to say. I know. Mm-hmm. But it was really nice to find out that the trustees were on board. And again, why wouldn't they be?
Yeah,
why wouldn't they want people to have access to the castle?
It's very rewarding to see such a response and such an immediate response.
Well, it's yes, and it's also rewarding to see love flow as a result of an idea. Because like I said, not only were they on board, they were enthusiastic and contributing new and fresh ideas as well of their own that they'd been thinking about for a while. And it was like, oh, I'm on the love train. You know, like it just takes a minute for somebody to be brave. And go, no, we can do this. Let's unlock the door and and they go, oh, I want to walk through that door. Absolutely. There's no reason to not walk through that door. And it was just
somebody to show them the door.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and in Chad's case, literally, because there's no Braille on the men's room.
I don't know where the door is.
Well, no, I just mean there's no Braille on the men's room door. And so he's just lucky that he knows. But he was telling me, he said, you know, this place is like a maze. And part of it, we also pitched.
Visually sighted.
Yeah, it's hard to find your way around if you can see. But well, one of the things that I pitched was, I said, you know, what if we do a blindfold tour of this place, a touch tour?
Yeah.
And it ends with you getting a dark magic show.
Nice.
You know, like you get to, you know, like in your hands, the stuff happens. And tactile and Handsome Jack and John Armstrong were like, yes, because they would love to do that stuff.
Yeah.
That's
castle
inventing.
The dark,
Yeah. Castle Dark, D-A-R-Q-U-E. Mm-hmm. We'll spell it like a goth girl in high school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll just offend everybody today. Anybody I haven't hit yet? The deaf people. Oh, I offered to volunteer to sign interpret the shows too. And I said, that should be a service that we offer. And I said, and we could probably find interpreters who for a brunch, you know, a free brunch or a couple tickets would come in and just do it because it's no thing for them.
Yeah, totally.
If they get to see the evening show and then come back the next night and interpret, you know, so they can kind of get the feel for what the guy says or what he does or what needs to be said for the, you know, the non-hearing to...
Yeah.
Understand what's going on. And I said, I'll do it, or we can find other people. I said, I'll volunteer. I don't know if other people will, probably not, it's just their job, you know, but they were like, yes, why would we not do that? So
you know, it'd be really cool to put in the castle, like really scary,
a dragon that breathes fire.
Well, that would work too.
Oh
no, not fire,
but you turn all the lights off.
Well, too soon.
Yeah.
The magic castle burned down like 3 years ago, you guys. It didn't burn down, but it was severely fire damaged.
You turn all the lights off, except, you know, just a few here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And then way off in the distance, you see a light coming from the stairs leading mm-hmm. to down to the W.C. Fields bar. Mm-hmm. But you hear these weird voices. Come on, pal. And you hear like tap, tap on glasses coming from where all the ventriloquist dummies are.
No.
And the puppets.
Come on.
Nope.
Come see us.
No. Nope.
You hear the little cowgirl. Right here, y'all. You know, and then.
Nope.
Come on, this way. Like the Jimmy Durant.
I know, I get it. I don't want.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Hate.
Isn't the word I'd use.
Yeah, that's terrifying. Creepy stuff.
Terrifying. Yeah, that's real nice, Paul. Let's put everybody in blindfolds and scare the bejesus out of them. It's not like we don't already have a seance show that's in the dark.
I'm so happy I skipped puppophobia. Like puppophobia. The fear of puppets.
Puppophobia is not. I don't know what it's called.
It is puppophobia. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Huh? It's not a fear of puppies, but it's.
I don't have puppophobia. I love puppets, in fact, but even that sounded creepy.
Well, it's the idea that they look like, because they look inhuman. Because, guys, for those of. Sorry, for those of you who haven't been to the Magic Castle, they're actually marionettes that Paul's talking about.
No, there are some ventriloquists.
There are a couple. There's a Charlie McCarthy doll in one of the cases.
Mortimer Snerd.
Yeah, there's a Mortimer Snerd as well. But there are also some ventriloquist dummies on strings. There's a Jimmy Durante marionette. There's
a cowgirl.
Yes, you mentioned her. A cowgirl. I think there's an ass, like a donkey in there, or a
horse. It's like Jesse and Bullseye.
It does look like Jesse and Bullseye. You're right. It's not Jesse and Bullseye, but it does look like them.
Yeah.
And when you push a button, they like herky jerky. Like they play this really weird song and they herky jerky move themselves. Like there's some kind of a thing that makes them move. And it's really unnatural and odd. And that's what Paul was talking about, having it sound like that. And they're only like a foot high, and they're really exaggeratedly carved, so their eyes are real buggy, and they've got the real exaggerated frowny puppet mouth that rah, 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 like the wooden dummies, but they're marionettes, so they shouldn't have moving mouths at all.
Yeah.
So it just gets worse and worse the more you look at them, and it's like, God! And then there's, I think you said Jimmy Durante, but there's a Jimmy Durante doll in there. Ballantyne's not in there. Scotland has him with him, right?
No, it's
just Jimmy
Durante.
Yeah, because the same guy made a Carl Ballantyne.
They do look similar, yeah.
Puppet, but they're real creepy in that they're just a foot high. So the fact that they look inhuman, they're exaggerated anyway, so they're grotesque, and the fact that they would be like, "Come down the hallway," it's like, nope. And that just creeps me out because I walk through there a lot, and I'm the only one walking through there, and I get mad because it's terrifying.
Not to me. It's like they.
All right.
Come down here. I'm on my way. Can I bring anybody a drink?
Bring me a knife.
Nope. Right. But I'll bring you a whiskey sour.
Nope. Nope.
You have to understand that when I was a kid, I had a Mortimer Snerd ventriloquist doll when I was 8, and I used to sleep with that like a teddy bear. You know, it was like I had Farfel on one hand. And Mortimer Snerd.
That's cute. I love it. You had a Farfel.
Oh, chocolate.
Well, that's
cute. I should have had Danny O'Day. It's like Danny O'Day, you know, and Farfel went together as sort of an act. But I liked Mortimer Snerd because he was like an idiot. It's like, well, I'm a bumpkin. I'm a funnier voice to do than Danny O'Day, who doesn't really have any personality. And all I do is whine for chocolate.
I'm jealous of the Farfel.
Oh, yeah.
I know, right?
I had a Mortimer Snerd. Didn't sleep with it. But I had one. At that age. I actually, my math teacher taught us how to do math. There was the Charlie way and the Mortimer Snerd way. The Mortimer Snerd way was a long way.
Oh, like Goofus and Gullah.
Yeah. The shortcut.
Yeah.
So he had me bring in my Mortimer Snerd and do their routine for the class. Yeah, proud.
Yeah.
That's what I am.
You go ahead and be proud of that. That's fine.
Oh, look, milking the pig today. Mortimer, you don't get milk from a pig. Well, that's what I discovered. There was a pig beat me up. You know, I make my own routines. And
wow.
He would sleep on my bed until I got, till the Jungle Book came out. And then I got a Baloo the bear and took his place. But anyway,
And then Mortimer says, when somebody loved me.
Well, I got relegated to the rocking chair. I'll just sit here and rock, rock, rock. And the Baloo sitting there.
Yep. And then the rats ate him.
And the rats ate him. Oh. The Baloo, rats did eat him.
Baloo got his.
The rats did eat him.
Paul had the...
quickly.
Right? I got nasty. The improv! Paul had
I
want to
hear Mortimer sing. When somebody loves me.
I just did that for you.
I know. It was really funny.
We're working on inspiration, not request here, pal.
Okay.
All right. So...
What, Baloo getting eaten by rats?
Yeah, this is what I'm inspired to tell right now. Okay. So Paul Dini had all the Jungle Book characters made by Stife that came out in the 60s. All of them.
Uh-huh. Oh my goodness.
He has one left because the rats ate him up.
No, I had a bunch of Stifes, and I had Baloo and Shere Khan. Shere Khan was safe. He's still in one piece.
Well, nobody can mess with Shere Khan.
No. Shere Khan was scary.
Shere Khan ate the rats.
Yeah. The rats burrowed in the box and they go, Shere Khan, oh, good God, run!
Jesus, the cops!
Yes,
you cut Shere Khan open and all the rats are in him and he's like, mm-hmm.
I suggest you run, yes.
Hey, that's my battle cry. Right.
But poor Baloo got nibbled up here and there, and I found this wonderful person, a toy doctor, like the one in Toy Story, presumably. Whoa. I've never met them. But they are a licensed Stife repairer. And I said, I have the original Baloo the Bear from 1967. And they said, send it to me. And I, you know, and there was a, and I paid for full restoral. And when I got it back.
Restoration.
It was Christmas morning perfect.
With a bow and everything.
With a bow and everything.
Wow.
The claws are perfect.
The same one?
Yep, the claws are perfect. It was cleaned up.
It's beautiful.
It was the ear was rebuilt. The nose that was torn off.
It cost you like 20 times more than the original.
No, it wasn't expensive at all.
It was about what the original was.
No, maybe a little bit more. The original was purchased in the 60s. Yeah. So I think it cost like $100.
Yeah, it was maybe $200.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Fully restored.
I mean, that's a lot of money to pay to have a stuffed animal sewn up, considering what it is, I tried to buy them. Christie's had all of them come up in auction about 2 or 3 years ago.
They're each a grand.
Shere Khan is like $800. Yeah. He's in good shape.
It depends on if you can find him, though. That's the thing. It's like you've got to find him, and he's got to be in decent shape. Yeah. And these were, I don't know what condition they were. The whole lot of them went for $800. It was four characters. Wow. It was the Panther.
Bagheera, Baloo, Shere Khan, and either King Louie or the baby elephant.
I don't know which it was.
They made five. The baby elephant, King Louie, and Shere Khan. But Shere Khan, they only made. They would redo them.
They make like 500 of them, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. Stife has a club now that you can join, and you can only buy their crap if you're in, like, the crap they make for the club if you're in the club. And I'm just like, oh, God, that's too much. Mm-hmm. It's just too much.
I'm in the club.
So we did that, and then today I got an illusion out in front of the house, and I uncrated it this morning, and we missed our therapy session. She called, and she was like, are you coming? And we were like, no, we're coming right now. And she's like, mm-hmm. So we went over there, and she's like, what do you not want to tell me? What's wrong? And we're like, oh, my God, don't be petulant. We just laid. She's very sweet.
I went for a walk this morning.
Yeah, you got up and went for a walk, and she called while you were walking.
Yeah, every morning I go for a walk now.
Oh, that's nice.
And so we did that. And then while we were there, because this is how our day was, while we're at therapy, the guy's like, hey, I'm in front of your house with your crates. And I'm like, of course you friggin' are, because you're supposed to be there between 10 and 12. I'm on my way home at 9:20. So it was fine. And so we pull up, and the guy's here. So he's unloading with his dolly. And what'd that stuff weigh? 300 pounds?
I don't know. It was a lot. He was by himself, and it was like easily like a three-man job.
With a crappy hand truck.
Awesome.
Yeah, like a crappy one. And I'm like, oh my God, what are you going to do with that? And he's like, you're going to help. And I'm like, So he put the...
It was Hercules moving, and I guess everybody has to be like strong as Hercules.
Yeah.
But I'm Hecate.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that happened today. I'll tell that story in a second, too. Yeah. And then, so the guy unloads the crates in front of the house, and Paul's like, well, what are you going to do about that when time the sprinklers come on? And so I started... I got the electric screwdriver, start taking it apart. Thank God I know how to use this stuff. Yeah. Thank you to my daddy, right? So I started taking it apart, and they had built the crates around the illusion. So we got the steps. There's steps and a huge mirror. You saw the mirror when you came up. There's this big Beauty and the Beast looking mirror leaned on my house right now, getting all wet because the ground is wet. So I did that, and then I left. I had to leave the stuff half broken down and unpacked. Like, the illusion was unpacked, and the crates were, like, half broken. They were all over the driveway to go do 16 auditions. And Art would corroborate. I mean, he recorded and edited them all. So 16 auditions for Atlas. I left there. Oh, and this is when it happened. I was coming down the stairs that I was wearing. This happened today. And I was wearing a skull sweater and a skull scarf, which you're seeing. Yes. You're looking at it right now. See the skulls on there?
Yeah.
They're cute, right?
Yeah.
And they're really obvious. You know, I'm all in black, and the sweater's black and white, and the scarf is black. It's cute. But I was coming down the stairs, or coming up the stairs, and this woman was coming down the stairs, and she had this beautiful swept up hair and gold and bronze jewelry on her wrists and beautiful like earthstone earrings and this long brown flowing dress. And I just thought I'd be cute, and I nodded at her and I went, "Gaia." And without missing a beat, she looked right back at me and said, "Hecate." Wow. And I went, "Holy shit."
Oh, the goddesses know each other.
And so I was going up, she was coming down, like I'm coming up out of the underworld, she's coming down from the earth, and we just meet like Sam and Al for coffee in the stairwell.
Yeah. Sam and Ralph.
Sam and Ralph, that's right. Yeah. For coffee in the stairwell. It was the best. And I put it on Facebook today, and people are like, "Oh, that's so cool, you win, you win." She wins.
Yeah.
She like, I mean, I was being cute, but no. She was on it. Didn't I mean, she was just Hecate. Yeah. I mean, it was, so good. And I told, when I got up to voice tracks, I was like, guys, I said, I wanted to chase her and ask her to lunch. And and Paul Luke, who's one of the...
I was surprised you didn't actually.
No, Paul Luke. Well, I had to be up there for art anyway. But Paul Luke is one of the audio engineers. Goes, "No, it would have ruined it."
Yeah.
He said, "It just would have ruined it." And he said, you have those moments. Just sit in them and enjoy that. You know, I mean, she was so, not only was she on board, got the joke, she responded in the same realm. Like, she stayed Greek.
Yeah.
She didn't, like, she didn't screw it up. She wasn't, you know, like, I mean, she was just... on it.
She probably danced out to the parking lot singing, "The classical lit degree finally paid off."
She calls her mother on the phone. "Remember that college?
Yeah.
I was just awesome."
Well, that's great. I love it when people are in on
it
the
was
joke.
The yeah. best. It was the best.
Yeah. It's like a like
man,
a,
I was so happy. Like I mean, she just made my life. I was just like, wow.
It's like the dollar. It's like the 99-cent store version of Down to Earth, where goddesses come to Earth. It's like,
don't call me 99-cent store.
No, well, I didn't.
Call me a 99-cent store goddess. Up yours. I'm gonna hand you a trash bag. Get in it. Take yourself out to the curb.
Oh yes, ma'am.
No, I'm just kidding. But don't ever do that again.
Okay.
No, but so and then I came home from there and took the rest of the crate apart. And then you got here. So, I mean, it was just like, something else happened. Oh, I ran like 4 errands in between. I did the banking and the post office and a bunch of other things. But, I mean, that's not a very exciting day. But, you know, the other stuff is. And the Magic Castle really is getting gearing up to do 3 shows in Santa Fe in February, which I'm excited about.
Very nice.
George
R. R. Martin. All right.
George R. R. Martin. Game of Thrones. Yeah,
George Martin.
I told him I'm gonna call him Germ.
Germ, nice.
He's like when you get an email from him, it says GRRM.
Yeah.
I'm like, your name is Germ? People call you Germ? And he's like, don't call me Germ. I'm like, I'm gonna call you Germ. He's so nice. He is so
emails
nice.
Emails from George R. R. Martin. I know so many people who just wet themselves over that.
I do. They're all about the magic show, though. They're not about that. He liked the PSA.
That's sent it great. To him.
He says, it's very powerful. I said, that's what Neil Gaiman said. Really and then I is. Thought, did you hear yourself? Did you hear what you just said to George R. R. Martin? That's what Neil Gaiman said.
Yeah.
You know these people. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I can't wait to go to Santa Fe.
George R. R. Martin. That really works. That works. George R. R.
Martin.
I taught Pete Ermigerd.
Ermigerd, yeah.
You teach him the Brer Rabbit and these literary classics. I show him pictures of Ermigerd.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Ermigerd, it's a Derlerk. Because he loves Daleks. Yeah. He was just obsessed with Daleks when we were there for Christmas. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a terrible person.
Yeah.
Wow. That's my contribution to this poor kid's upbringing.
Pete loves the Brer Rabbit, though.
Classy and... You know, and he asks all these questions about the war, and I'm like, let me educate you on internet memes. What? I make him dumber by association.
And then I tell him about Bigfoot, you know, because he'll say...
Yeah, he'll ask you. He's like, it's so funny. Like,
and it's like I have these long debates
Pete is
with
our
my
nephew, by the way.
And he'll say, but don't... And he's like the biggest negotiator. He's going to be like on like a TV...
He's
going
to be a politician, I think.
He'll either be a politician or like one of those TV guys who's always arguing...
Crossfire with Peter.
Yes. And this is our dialogue is like, but he's been seen for years. There are eyewitnesses accounts. You can't discount that cabin that was attacked in the 30s by a group of them. Bigfoot is real. And I'll say, but there's nothing in the fossil record. And he'll say, but isn't it possible that they're still there? And we go back and forth over, you know, whether
Bigfoot. Well, I just love the way that he presents things to you. We'll be driving the car and he will go, now is the time for us to debate about the existence of Bigfoot.
Yes.
He's 11. I'm more
fascinated that this little kid is a cryptozoologist and like has a educational.
He's everything.
Oh, it's you like I've given him books on cryptozoology and
not knowing everything about it.
Yeah, you know, he takes brilliant. After us.
He didn't take after me, he takes after you.
Well,
Bigfoot doesn't exist, but the skunk ape. No.
Totally. He will.
But the giant squid they found last week, it was 140
feet. Yeah, that was.
No, big. That was on the internet. That was blown out of proportion. It was only 35 feet.
Oh. So.
35 feet is a pretty giant squid.
And he said, and then it'll come back, but they didn't find the two lead tentacles, which would extend it to 60 feet.
Wow.
So they'll give you that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, he's crazy. He's so, brilliant.
Brilliant kid.
Right. And he always has been since he was wee.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the one stuffed animal he still has is the one that Uncle Paul gave him when he was a baby.
His little stuffed jaguar, Jags.
He calls it Jags.
Mm-hmm. And they want to hear about Brer Rabbit all the time. Like, what
does
he even
Deuce
to?
Does not want to talk about Peter anymore. Deuce wants to talk about Deuce. He is just over it.
Yeah.
He's exhausted. These poor dogs, they don't feel good. And they're just like, you know.
Yeah.
Eating ground turkey and rice. Sucks. Poor guys. But Peter's, he's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
He's just brilliant. He's so funny.
Mm-hmm.
I think I told this story on here before, but we had just seen the Avengers. We had taken him to see the Avengers, and he was assigning who was who in the car.
Yeah.
And he goes, okay, well, Uncle Paul, he goes, I'm going to be Iron Man. So Uncle, like, he just calls it out of everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, like none of us would want to be Iron Man. Excuse me, I totally would. and he's just like, okay, we had taken him and Kala. And he was assigning roles, or maybe they had both just seen it.
Maybe they had both seen it, yeah.
We were at the aquarium. That was, we were at the aquarium, and I told Peter.
Yeah.
Because there's giant whales, like life models of whales up attached from the ceiling in Monterey.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And when we walked in, I said, hey, Pete. I said, you know, at 10 minutes after the hour, those whales drop down full force and crush all the people underneath them. And he's like, what time is it? Like, he didn't even care. He's just like, what time is it? Like, he just wanted to watch it happen. Yeah, he's like, okay, well, no, we're out of harm's way. What time is it? Let's wait right here. But anyway, we were driving and talking about the Avengers. And he said he was Iron Man and Uncle Paul was Captain America. And Paul was like, thanks a lot for nothing. And I said, well, what am I, Pete? And he goes, well, you're a girl, so you should be Black Widow, but you're kind of always mad like the Hulk. So, and I said, so I guess that makes me the Incredible Widow. And Paul was like, I don't like that at all.
And She-Hulk wasn't in the movie, so we
and
really
Paul goes, well, maybe Black Hulk. We'll combine it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, that would be Black Hulk.
The Scarlet Hulk.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, Scarlet Witch is gorgeous.
Yeah.
There is a Scarlet Witch coming. They cast her.
Yeah, yeah. Or the Black...
And a couple of them, I think, right?
What's that?
There's a set of Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch in the Avengers movie and the X-Men movie.
That's what I hear, you know, like they divvy them up, yeah.
It's smart, though. You know, they've been doing something with these franchises lately, like casting multiple actors quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So no one dude is Batman, no one chick is going to be Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. Once she's in the movies cast, there's going to be a bunch of them.
Yeah.
You know, like she'll be that for that iteration, then they'll recast her if she pops for the next one, and, you know. And I think it's really interesting, and it's something that they said a long time ago. They don't want any one person associated with those characters because people get old.
Yeah.
And the characters are kind of timeless. And so if Adam West, you know, Uncle Batman, is the Batman, you know, like, I mean, he's an old guy now. And he's still cool. What about him?
They pushed Batman Superman back a year till 2016. Yeah.
Why did they do that? That's the one that has Wonder Woman in it.
Well, that's the one with Ben Affleck playing Batman. I don't know.
Maybe it sucks.
You saw Conan O'Brien's tweet mentioning the release of Batman 66 finally.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Batman 66 is on its way.
Adam West TV series finally getting the DVDs.
You know, the heartbreaking thing about that is, you know, okay, we still have Adam West, Burt Ward, and Julie Newmar.
Yeah.
But I wish they had had the foresight to record all along Burgess Meredith, Cesar Romero. We just lost Michael Ansara last year. Well, actually, was he?
I love Burgess Meredith.
Well, he wasn't on Batman. No, he was on my Batman. He played Mr. Freeze on my Batman. But is Eli Wallach still alive?
I don't know about that.
Okay. George Sanders, Mr. Freeze, and
Frank Gorsh.
Mr. Freeze was played by Otto Preminger, Eli Wallach, and George Sanders, Otto Preminger, and Eli Wallach played Mr. Freeze. And they're all dead. Although Eli Wallach might still be alive. I don't know. But all
if he is, he's going to be pissed at you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Eli. But all the other major villains, everybody else who played a major villain is gone.
Yeah.
Frank Gorshin is gone.
Yeah.
Art Carney is gone. Vincent Price.
Cesar Romero.
Cesar Romero's gone?
Yeah. All yeah. right. Even guys who were like one-shot villains, like, you know, like...
Pharaoh.
What?
The Pharaoh.
Terrible. Oh, Victor Bono, yeah.
Yeah.
Terrible villain.
And then, oh yeah, the King Tut. And then,
oh yeah, King Tut. Yeah.
Yeah. Terrible. All those guys. It would have been great if you, if this had come out 15 years ago, then they, or even 10 years ago, they could have done, you know. But then again, they might have been like, that was the 60s. I was drunk off my ass. What was I thinking?
Or they might have been make a deal with my estate and prolonged this BS even longer.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm glad it's coming out. I'm excited.
I hope they have Adam and Bert doing some commentaries on those.
And Sherlock, we'll discuss next week after you've seen it.
Yes, I gotta see it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. And from what I remember, the Batman movie commentary, did you ever get a chance to see that one? The Batman movie, the TV, Adam West DVD that came out.
Who did commentary on that?
Adam West and Burt Ward. From what I understand, Adam West was drunk the entire time.
Yeah.
Who was?
Calling Burt Ward his Robin.
That's weird.
I gotta see this.
I filled in as his Robin at comic convention. Oh, Paul, tell them about Uncle Batman.
Yes.
Oh, anywhere but here. Take me now, please.
You know, that is a position that I think every nerd at Comic-Con would give their left leg to be in.
What, it was Robin?
And you're just
Batman?
Like, don't touch me. You know, and you're like, F off, Uncle Batman, with your terrible
idea. He had a grip of steel. His hand.
He's Batman!
Of course he does. He's Batman forever. I mean, it was like the claws went right in my... Oh, man, Adam West, stop touching me.
See, that's what I'm saying. You're ungrateful. You got to go, man, Adam West just trying to get me to do Uncle Batman. It's ridiculous, and this is my life right now. This is my life right now. Are you kidding me with this?
All I saw was letters from the legal department saying, do not endorse Uncle Batman.
Do not engage Mr. West. Unless he's had his medicine.
Julie, I was on the panel with Julie Schwartz. He was like, better you than me.
Julie Schwartz, you guys, so that you know, was ahead of DC Comics at the time.
Yeah, yeah. He was a legend.
Yes.
And let's see, what else? It's, I don't know, you know, gotta love
Dr. Those. Hedgehog's been paged almost 4,000 times.
Oh, yeah?
On my frickin' Twitter. Friggin' Hedgehog. I talked about this last time, didn't I?
Think so, but for sure.
I was saying I don't understand social. I think I did because I don't. I said I don't understand social media.
Oh,
like I pour my heart out on Twitter and I put some stupid thing up about a hedgehog and it's been retweeted 3,800 times.
Wow.
Why? I was really excited and then it broke 1,000 and I was like, oh my god, 1,000 retweets. That's crazy. And I got like 106 or 100 and almost 200. 200 followers from Dr. Hedgehog.
Wow.
I don't know what happened.
Wow.
I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
But every time, like now I'm getting these Twitter notifications like so-and-so plus 15 other people retweeted your tweet. And it's like, this just gets me every time. And I'm like, oh, friggin' Dr. Hedgehog. Stop paging Dr. Hedgehog. Paging Dr. Hedgehog.
You know, for as much as people have asked us at various times, like, how do you do a certain magic trick? Or they ask me, how do you get started in the writing business?
Yeah.
If I've gone online and had written up, you know, like 5 paragraphs on how to do that, or you had outlined your best tricks, we'd have like 20 hits on it. But if
that's
we posted
exactly what I'm talking about.
A picture of a cat falling over, you know, millions.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And that was what I said. I said, all this time I've been trying to figure out what the internet is for. The internet is for hedgehog.
Cats falling over and hedgehog. Yeah.
It's for hedgehog. And I was like, I'm okay with that, but I need to learn that this is all it is and stop trying so hard. You know what I mean? Just have some fun.
Yeah.
Because that's what it's all about, is having fun and paging hedgehogs.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who didn't hear what the gag was, there's this, it's a picture gag of a doctor's door, and it's Dr. A. Hedgeh, H-E-D-G-E-H. And then there's a sign underneath the nameplate that says, This is as a notice to whoever keeps writing OG to the end of my name, which would make it say Dr. A. Hedgehog. If I catch you, you are dead. Sincerely, Dr. A. Hedge. And the person had written OG on the note instead of on the nameplate. So it says Dr. Hedgehog.
That's wonderful.
It's masterful. It's marvelous. And it's been retweeted 4,000 yeah. times. Yeah. And it's an old joke. Like, it's yeah. been circulating the internet forever, man. And I don't know why. I don't know why. That's so weird.
Everything old is new again. You know, people, that's the internet is as vast.
The internet.
You can just.
What you did.
Go. Yeah. You can just go on there and go forever. And then you find little buried treasures and things, and you pull them out.
Well, George Takei has his whole following because he finds all that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, people love his stuff. And half the time, I don't even subscribe to it because I've seen it already.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but people go to him to see that stuff, and they get excited. You know, but also the stuff I like is a little more macabre. I love Cyanide and Happiness.
I love that too.
Right? Yeah. So I love, my friend Liz Hogue, Bizarro's wife, she's been on here.
Oh, yeah.
Posted one of theirs, and it was a guy was smoking, and his friend goes, "What the hell, man? I thought you gave that up for New Year." And the smoker goes, "I did. I gave up." And they both just kind of stood there frowning. It was like, "Happy New Year from Cyanide and Happiness." It's like, "Yeah.
That's awesome.
I did give up. I gave up." Oh my God.
I wonder if I'd be trying too hard if I just revived my characters as like Sunday pages for my website.
You know what? You've been talking about this for 10 years. Do it or don't.
I'll do it.
She said impatiently, sick of hearing it.
Sick of it. I gotta just sit down and write some stuff.
Sick of it.
I have like 12 Mutant Texas strips ready to go. I just haven't.
I'm aware. All right.
Okay.
Get them drawn. All right.
Yeah.
Who are you gonna have drawn? Alvarez?
If he'll do it now.
What? What? Is he stuck up? What,
no, why no, no.
Because I know he's busy on one other project for sure, but.
He's fast. I just have to. It's like. Just sign off on the damn thing. Finish it. It's the coyotes driving around in a car. It's like three gag pages of them.
Excuse
in
me,
a low
is
rider.
That bunny on my mantle missing an ear?
No, I think it's just got
one's back.
One's yeah, back. It's one an right optical illusion.
I can't see. It's left ear. It's left ear and your right side. All right.
The
I'm sorry.
The one being kids me, right?
Yep. Sorry for the interruption.
Tubers.
As long as it's got two, because
yeah,
I was about to
tubers.
Be
pissed.
No,
that's good.
All right.
It's just.
It can be flop back. It cannot be missing.
No.
That is not. Yeah. What is this? All right, we're done.
Yeah, I just can't worry if people are going to, and how people are going to enjoy it or not. I just have to do it. And somebody's going to like it.
Hey, I love everybody.
I love everybody.
Shut this off.
So are we done?
Yeah.
Another one down.
Yeah.
50 more to go. We can call this a year.
Nice.
Wow.
We can do 50 jukeboxes and then call it a year early.
That's a lot of music. Go. I'm too tired for that.
What?
That's, no.
You gotta pick the song.
All right.
Song. Oh, yeah, it's Hula Week. And,
Segway. Oh, Hula. Next. Let's do a Hula Week.
Hula Week.
Yeah, like Hula let's Hula do Hula Week.
Oh, now we're on. Oh. Well, let's just do 52 weeks of Hula. Oh.
No, I was going to have Hula music next week. You want to have Hula music next
yeah?
week?
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. We go tropical next week.
Nice.
We're going to Hawaiian.
Yeah.
Right. In the mood for some spring.
All right.
Like, I don't know. Get us out Poi of the winter
spin.
Rush.
Oh, yeah. It's been such a brutal winter here.
Yeah. It's just so cold.
If we wanted to be cold, we'd go to Hawaii where it's 75 degrees.
You're being nasty. We're going to have an earthquake if you talk like that. Don't do it.
75 degrees in Hawaii now compared to us at 85 degrees. And then the rest of the country, it's
like
40 below.
Shut up. Somebody on my Facebook today, her name is Sky. I went to high school with her, was like, 30 sounds like wonderful. If it was 30, I'd be wearing shorts. And I'm like, ha, ha. I didn't say anything, but I just thought.
It got overcast today. I'm like, ooh, I'm going to my car and get my jacket.
Right. Right.
It got overcast, but it was still 80 degrees.
I was pissed last night because we were driving around. I'm like, put up the window. It's cold. And he's like, you hear yourself? And I'm like, listen, I'm here right now.
Yeah.
I got so sad this weekend driving back and forth over the Carmel River. And like I said last week, you know, the white trash swimming pool just ain't there this year.
Because it's dry.
It's dry.
Yeah.
We look like fools if we sat there in folding chairs in the middle of a gravel ditch. Although, you know, in the white trash swimming pool, when there's water, we don't look much better. We just look like we're comfy fools.
We were supposed to stop this podcast 10 minutes ago.
I guess we were, weren't we?
Yeah. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Have a great week.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Rashi or at Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.